This episode contains explicit language. Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, June 16th, the I Want My Boobs Back edition. I'm Zach Rosen. I make the Best Advice Show podcast. I live in Detroit with my family. My daughter Noah is 4 and my son Ami is 1.
My name is Jamila Lemieux. I'm a writer, contributor to Slate's Care and Feeding parenting column, and mom to Naima, who is 9, and we live in Los Angeles.
I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the homeschool and family travel blog, Dutch Dutch Goose. I'm the mom to 3 littles, Henry, who's 10, Oliver, who's 8, and Teddy, who's 5. And we live in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Today, we've got a tricky question about a toddler who is still learning to keep her hands to herself. Then on Slate Plus, in grand mom and dad tradition, we're visiting with a host parent. Up next on the hot seat is Elizabeth's father, in honor of Father's Day. Here's a sneak peek of what you'll hear if you have Slate Plus.
That's a great question. Each of them reminds me of Elizabeth in a different way. It's like they've taken a little bit different parts of her personality.
If you want a weekly bonus segment from us and your other Slate favorites, consider signing up for Slate Plus. You'll also get to listen ad-free and get unlimited access to the Slate website. To sign up now, go to slate.com/momanddadplus. Again, that's slate.com/momanddadplus. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to dive into some historical triumphs and fails.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Hey, Care and Feeding listeners, it's me, Lucy Lopez. What do ASMR, AI chatbots, and diet culture all have in common? They are all topics explored on Embodied, the Ambie Award-winning weekly podcast from WUNC, North Carolina Public Radio. Each week, acclaimed reporter Anita Rao holds up her journalistic lens to all kinds of things that are sometimes hard to talk about, like sex, health, and relationships. Embodied dives into what some consider taboo to answer important questions about our bodies and our society. Nothing's off limits. Hear from expert guests, including doctors, historians, and psychologists, as they break down everything from the dynamics of egg donation, how couples combat mental health struggles like schizophrenia and OCD, and the profits and pitfalls of the self-care industry. If you need a place to start, I highly recommend checking out the recent episode where Anita interviewed 2 couples who continued to choose each other after one partner came out as trans. So go ahead, follow Embodied and get new episodes every Friday wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're back, and with Father's Day approaching, we thought it might be fun to share some triumphs and fails of our parents from our childhood. Wow, this is rich. Jamila, where are you going to go with this?
Okay, so when I was in the 5th grade, I had the amazingly fortunate opportunity to write, direct, and star in a play that my class, members of my class acted it out for the rest of the 5th grade. Like,
wow.
It wasn't until I was an adult that I realized like what a really huge deal that was, that like I was given such a privilege, and I wish that I'd stuck with playwriting. And anyway, it was super dope. My 5th grade teacher, Mrs. Lewis, like, I guess I wrote the play and told her about it. And she was like, love it. Like, we can do this as a show. And anyway.
So your teacher produced it. That's cool.
So my teacher produced it. And it was called My Life. And it was about this girl who was like kind of acting up in school. And her parents were like frustrated with her. And so she like goes to sleep and she's visited at night by like her ancestors who are like, you know, one was maybe, I don't know if I traced it all the way back to like slavery, but like, I know that one of them was like a civil rights activist, you know, and like, they lived through difficult times, right? And like, were there to tell her basically, you know, as these figures typically do in these types of stories, like, get your shit together. You're super privileged. Like, do you know how easy you have it? We marched so you could like go to school and like not try. Are you kidding me? And so they come to her and she has this revelation. And so I played the lead character. It was also amazing. I got to star in this show. Like, wow. This is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. Anyway, there was a little sister character, and I noticed early in the show, because we had a script, but we did a bit of improv-ing, that the audience really reacted to, like, me, you know, she and I arguing, or, like, you know, me mistreating her. And so, for laughs, I kept, like, you know, messing with her, and, you know, she's falling down all dramatic, and it's super funny. And so, at the end of the play, when the girl has the resolution, the lead character, you know, that she's going to be better, she says something to her sister like, but I still don't have to respect you, you know, and of course the audience laughs there in fifth grade. But let me tell you who does not laugh. My father, who for years made me feel guilty about that, would bring that up. Like,
what would he say?
He just was like, I was just so disappointed. It was just such a positive moment. And that was just so, you're going to tell your sister, I don't have to respect you. Like, he took stuff like that so seriously. Like, he didn't, so like, I didn't get the approach. Like, my mom couldn't make it to the play because this is like real life in the 90s. And like, there's no, I wish there was a videotape of it, you know, but like, my mom couldn't make it because she had to work. And so my dad came and like, you know, I should have been like showered with like how amazing and how incredible, and like he totally weighed it down with like, oh my gosh, wow. So that's my childhood fail that I've carried with me, and I had not thought about it until we had to come up with a childhood fail. So I cannot wait to call my father today and make him feel bad because
listen up, daddy.
You couldn't have just said good job.
You couldn't have just focused on what an amazing thing I had done. No wonder I didn't write any more plays or do anything like that until I was in college. Like, I could have been Susan Laurie Parks. I could be on Broadway right now. I could have been a very important playwright. And that little light was just womp womp. Thanks, Dad.
Let us know what he says when you tell him that he's on the show this week in this way.
I will.
My parents, I'm going to call it a fail, but really comes from like a triumph that they had had every other time, in that we spent most of our summers at like sleepaway summer camp, even from a young age. And the thing my parents did really well was to always make sure that like they mailed letters to camp before we even left. Like, we always had stuff coming. They did such a great job with that. But I went to this Girl Scout camp, and this was still pretty early in my camping experience. I want to say I was like maybe 6 or 7. And I am a terrible speller. And I had gotten to camp and I had forgotten my goggles. And I wrote this letter to my parents. And this camp was not that far. And I was there for like 2 weeks. And I basically was like, please send my goggles. Like, can you please put my goggles in an envelope or drive the hour and drop them off? Because like swimming in this pool without goggles is terrible. But I misspelled the word goggles. Aww. And I don't know if my parents were trying to teach me a lesson, but the next letter that came was like, we can't find your googles. We don't know what googles are. And so I wrote back like, goggles. You know, like, drew a little picture. Another email. Like, I don't know if they were trying to get me to learn to spell goggles. By the way, when I typed out the reminder for this, still can't spell goggles. Had to rely on the autocorrect. But I just remember, it's like when they picked me up, the first thing I thought was, why didn't you send my stupid goggles? Why didn't you send them? You know, like I spent 2 weeks at this camp swimming with this burning chemicals. Oh my God.
Your eyes are bloodshot 2 weeks later.
Yes, because were teaching me some kind of lesson, or maybe didn't care enough to read the letter. I don't know.
Do you remember what they said?
No, like, I mean, was it teaching you a lesson? My father definitely made some kind of joke like, goggles?
I wish we would have known this before we interviewed your dad for Slate Plus, because we would have asked him about it.
I know. I'd like to hear his side of the story.
Oh, goodness. Zach, what about you? How have your parents failed
honestly,
you?
99% of the time, my parents were so exquisitely loving and amazing. The asterisk that I'll share today is my dad had rage, like a lot of men of that generation, or like a lot of people, I guess, in general. I've been talking about baseball so much on this show. It's been Noah and T-ball has just brought up a lot of stuff for me. But I'm 6 years old, so this is when the coaches are pitching. I don't think the league keeps track of who wins or loses. There's no stakes in terms of like no playoffs. There's no reason. You might sense where this is going. There's no reason for someone to get really animated or excited about a certain call in a six-year-old's baseball game. Mm-hmm. My dad wasn't the coach at this time. He later became a coach, a wonderful coach. This never happened again after this time when I'm 6 years old. But he disagreed with a call from the umpire and gets into it with an umpire who, in retrospect, is a 15-year-old kid. So it's my dad, who's like 30 or whatever, yelling so much at this 15-year-old kid who, and the 15-year-old, by the way, is giving him attitude back. So it's like a manager and an umpire, like face to face, you know, with like no room in for like their noses touching. I don't think they got that close, but they got so close that my dad got kicked out of my baseball game.
Oh, no.
He got thrown out.
When you were like six.
I'm standing on third base. I can feel myself there right now. I'm just watching this happen. Everyone else is watching it happen too. Everyone else is watching my dad go nuts. And this really didn't happen much, but it happened then. And I remember feeling so embarrassed. And my dad got thrown out and he asked me, like in the middle of the game, like, Zach, do you want to come home? And I was like, no. Like, I want to finish my goddamn game.
I wanted you to walk out and not acknowledge me so that not everyone would know who you belong to.
Exactly. Yeah. You should have looked over your shoulder, Zach.
Who are you talking to? Who are you talking to, sir? I don't know you. I was embarrassed. He was in full rage. He later apologized, but I'll never forget it. And honestly, I can think of one other time in my childhood where he raged out like that. Maybe I'll tell that story another day, because it's a funny one too. But visceral memory of that one. But I love you, Dad. I forgive you.
I mean, you don't seem like much of a rager, but does that inform your T-ball parenting? Or are you just like, I will never make that particular mistake?
I think it informs so much of who I am in general. I think I've been so conscious of like not wanting to be ragey, and so much so that I'm like, before I met my wife, I considered myself and still a somewhat of a passive person because I was so conflict avoidant. Mm-hmm. I do trace it back to that. I've surprised myself when I have gotten ragey the couple times with Noah when she's testing me, like, oh, whoa, I didn't know I had that in me, but like, I'm not above it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm definitely aware of it, and I try to never do it, but slip up on a rare occasion.
I mean, neither of my parents were ragers, but I will say, like, my mother, who I believe, I mean, until we started really arguing when I was a teenager, I was like, that is somebody who never, like, raised her voice at anyone, never got overly upset. I'm like, I know people disrespected her. I know that, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. She's really even keeled.
Where was your mom on the rage meter, Elizabeth?
You know, I grew up in a house of lawyers. Both my parents are lawyers. So everything was sort of like on trial. Like, be prepared to argue your way and have backup and evidence. And so she didn't rage. She just like, I don't want to say rained down justice, but that's how it felt.
And she was the judge, like,
oh, yeah.
And the prosecutor.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. And the jury. And the...
Okay, let's take another quick break, and when we come back, we'll get into today's listener question. All right, let's get into today's question. It's being read, as always, by the wonderful Shasha Leonard.
Hi, Mom and Dad. I'm the stepmom of a beautiful 3.5-year-old daughter. We have a great bond. Her dad and I have majority custody of her, and her mom gets her every other weekend. And we have been co-sleeping since they came into my life. It works for our family. And after a hard divorce, it was what was best for her. The problem I am having with the situation is that she is constantly grabbing for my breasts. Her little hands find their way up my shirt at night. In public, she tries to stick her hand down my shirt. In the summer, when sleeping in a tank top, I've woken up from a dead sleep to her trying to latch. I recently found out her mom had still been breastfeeding her the nights that she had her. I know this is not my daughter's fault, and I've tried to explain that this is something her and her mommy do, but she doesn't seem to get it. I know she's just looking for comfort, as she gets plenty of nutrition at this point, and I think she's just trying to bond. I've been dealing with it for a while, but now I have to draw the line. My partner and I recently found out that we are expecting, and I have entered the realm of the horrible first trimester boob pain. Her little hands that were never welcome are even less welcome now, and I'm struggling to picture what this is going to be like when I'm breastfeeding the new baby, and she still has a hard time understanding that while I am her mom, I can't do these mom things with her. Any advice is welcome. Your show has been invaluable through these transitions. All the best. I want my boobs back, temporarily.
I had this happen with Teddy. I actually almost asked Jamila, you and Dan during, like, what the heck am I supposed to do about this? Except that then finally what I was doing worked and it stopped. It probably stopped a year ago, so around 4.
But to clarify, he wasn't doing it to another.
No, to me, No, yes, yeah. The only difference is, yes, that it was still happening. I mean, when it first started, he would reach for other breasts as well. Uh-huh. Like mm-hmm. It was just, it's something that has always been a comfort to him. But what I found that worked is to remember that you're absolutely right. She's looking for comfort, and so often they associate the breast was self-soothing. And so I think the thing is to put down a hard but gentle rule that any kind of touching is inappropriate, and just removing the hands. For us, it was a transitional object. I found, actually my friend Bethany found the sea otter like blanket, but the head is round and squishy, and then the little blanket comes off the side. So it has kind of a similar feeling to a breast. And I would literally carry it around and I would, say like, no, we don't touch mommy's breasts. And then I would put his hand on the transition object. And I would say things like, I think what you actually need is a hug. Or, as I'm removing the hand, do you need some time with mom, some one-on-one mm-hmm. time with mom? For the sleeping, because we also had something like this happen, I just had to wear like a long sleeve shirt until it just stopped, like basically cutting off any access. And it did, like I said, it just became less and less of a behavior, and then it just stopped. And I would say every once in a while now, particularly like if I'm changing in front of him, he will still try, oh, there they are. I have to just say, like, remember, like, this is like mommy's body and your body, right? And you don't need to be touching mommy's breasts. And it just took a long time. So I feel like what you have to do is just every time being like firm. If you're holding her and it happens, you might have to put her down. In bed, you may have to put like a pillow or something between you, but I would just make it really difficult and try to replace it with something else that's comforting.
I think it's important to make the mommy stepmommy distinction. Like there is a line. There are things that are mommy things that are not stepmommy things. And breastfeeding is typically a mommy thing exclusively. You would have some pretty complicated and unlikely circumstances, right, in which a family is so progressive that we're just going to share breastfeeding. And, oh, since you're nursing, you can breastfeed my child. That's not really a thing in most families. So essentially, I think it's fair to say that for your family, at the very least, breastfeeding is a mommy thing, not a stepmommy thing. And so focusing on like identifying what can meet like her comfort needs at that point, because what she's reaching for is comfort. And it also could be missing her mother. That's certainly part of it. That's a particular thing that she'd been able to do at night with her mother to go to sleep. So the fact that she can't do it with you can create, a feeling of missing her mommy that might not have been there before, despite how happy and comfortable and loved she feels with you and your partner. But, give her that talk, you know, about the difference between mommy and stepmommy, and, you know, that your love for her is tremendous, but, you know, that there are just certain things that are just between a mother and daughter, you know, and that's okay. But that you are there to give her as much love and affection as she needs. And, you know, if she's craving, you know, something, she can, you know, she can get it from you. She just can't get the breast from you.
Yeah, maybe there's something else the two of you can do, you know, that's like, that's a mommy thing. This is a stepmommy thing. Because Jamila, I do think you're right that, like, she needs to make some kind of distinguish between this, especially as a new baby enters the picture, to make sure that the child feels, you know, like, I still love you tremendously. And it's not an issue of I don't love you. It's an issue of in this family, the rule is that your milk comes from your mom and I'm your stepmom. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you can, it would be very sweet to come up with your thing. Like, let's do something that's just for me and you.
Yeah.
Whether it's, I mean, your boobs are hurting right now. So, you know, maybe it's like, instead of snuggling, if you don't want that right now, like, there's this like very specific, like, butterfly kiss that we'll invent, or some like cool hugging handshake, something that's just for you, which can substitute, hopefully. But 3.5, you know, this girl's getting to the age where she'll be able to start to understand, you know, these boundaries and these delineations, I think.
I think you should start thinking about what this looks like when the baby arrives, as opposed to waiting until you're overwhelmed by your newborn's, you know, need for you. You don't want it to become a situation. And I, you know, can attest to Naima having these feelings that, you know, the three of you are a complete set and you don't really need me. Because the three of you are a perfect family together, right? You have the same parents, you know? And, you know, no matter how loved she is and no matter the fact that she's older, you know, it may cause her to question, you know, where she fits in particular, if, like, say, for example, the bedtime ritual becomes 100% your partner, you know, if your partner takes over the bedtime ritual and you're consumed with the baby, that could certainly, you know, create some feelings for her that will be difficult to contend with later. So I think, you know, making sure that at night, like, your husband takes turns with you rocking the baby to sleep, because you need to also be a part of your stepdaughter's bedtime ritual too. And maybe he reads the book, because that takes longer, but, you know, that you're still a part of her going to bed and waking up in the morning, that she still, you know, has you integrated into her time at her dad's house.
This is, Jamila, such a good point. And also with the co-sleeping, if you think you're going to end the co-sleeping because now you're going to co-sleep with the baby, or if you're going to continue and that's going to obviously lead to a change of how everyone sleeps in the bed to keep everyone safe, you need to think about that and start instituting that now, because changes that come right around baby get associated with baby. So if you can make those changes now instead of a few days before you go to the hospital or when the baby comes back, and start talking about those changes, but also new privileges they're going to get, you know, the older child's going to get, and new things they're going to get to do with mommy and daddy. So it's not such a traumatic, like, this small thing comes home. And Jamila, you're so right. Like, you also have the potential for this to feel so much more alienating, just because of your dynamics and being a stepmom. So I think really carefully thinking about that, in terms of all of this. And I would assume that actually the desire for your breasts may grow because it's going to seem like that's like something that the baby has. And it was something that felt like she had or had access to. So just kind of be, I think it's about being aware and being compassionate to what this child is going through as you're making these changes that she has no control over, right? Like, the world is chaotic to little kids. And so trying to prepare them for those things and explain as best you can to their little ears, like, why the stuff is happening and how much they are loved and part of this family and important.
Well, I want my boobs back. Hopefully some of these ideas help. We'd love to know how it goes. Everyone else, have you had a sticky situation and aren't sure who to ask? We are here for you. Let us know by emailing us at momanddad@slate.com or send us a voice memo and we may play it on the show. That's also where you can send any other questions you have. And that's it for our show. Monday, we will be off for Juneteenth, but we will be back in your feeds next Thursday. While you're at it, please subscribe to the show and give us a rating and review on Apple or Spotify. This episode of Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Rosemary Belson and Christy Taiwo Macanjula and Jasmine Ellis. For Jamila Lemieux and Elizabeth Newcamp, I'm Zach Rosen. Thanks for listening. Happy Father's Day.